is D'Lo and KC on ESPN 1320, brought to you by Sky River Casino.
All right, a couple of pieces of business to attend to. I know I've been bad with this all day, man, but if you want to get in on the phone lines, please do. Obviously, KC isn't here. Kyle working his second show of the day. Big thanks to Kyle Mattson. I don't know if you and I have done a show together, you know, since we might have been down south, but...
Just you and me?
Yeah.
Ooh. No, I've filled in for...
Okay, yeah.
I think I filled in...
Probably when you were at 95.7.
Yeah, but I don't know if I did a whole show. I know I did whole shows with Kenny. I don't know if I did whole shows with you, though.
Okay. All right.
I have no idea.
Well, that's cool. We were like, man, Jesse's gone, Joe's gone, KC's gone. All right, we're gonna keep moving.
This station has 4 full-time employees, not including Charlie, and 3 of them are gone today.
That's correct. That's correct.
Well, 2 of them, I guess. No,
yeah,
worry.
That's
fine. We got it.
We got it.
It's good.
That's what we do. It's good. It's been a great week. Nothing has gone wrong this week whatsoever.
Yeah.
Absolutely nothing. 916-909-1320. That's what I said I was bad about, man. If you want to tap in and talk about anything the Kings are doing, anything that's happened around the league, please do. It's the Elk Grove Kia talk line. Big shout out to my man Colt there at Elk Grove Kia. Gonna come in and see you, boy. Looking at that EV9, man. We on the way. 916-909-1320. If you missed Kyle Mattson and James Hamm, the insiders, talk to Neat Clifford's coach at Colorado State, Al Farouk Manesh, earlier in the day. Don't worry, we're going to have that conversation in its entirety coming up in about 30 minutes or so, right about 3:15. We'll run that conversation back for you. So hang tight. It's on the way. Lots of insightful stuff from Neat Clifford's coach at Colorado State. A couple of things around the league before we dive back into the Kings, because there is still very much a Keegan Murray conversation that needs to be had. We started the conversation earlier. It centered more around like DeMar DeRozan and Malik Monk and, you know, who might be here, who might not be here. And there seems to be this belief that DeMar DeRozan's very existence in Sacramento affects Keegan Murray. And I take exception to that for a variety of different reasons, and I'm going to tell you why coming up in just a couple of minutes. There are a couple of things I mentioned earlier I do want to touch on, or we'll never get back to them. I mentioned the articles. I think they were over in The Athletic, and it was probably article versus articles, but still, it's going to wind up on social media, and it's going to start getting some run, and it's going to get aggregated, and it was about Luka Doncic, you know, taking this offseason seriously, you know, being in shape. I don't think there were any pictures attached to it. It was just a write-up about what his approach is to the offseason. Of course, there have been pictures of Luka Doncic out that have made their way to social media. And it's one of those, uh-oh, look at Luka, he's losing weight. And, of course, with that, we all remember the saga of Ben Simmons hitting three-pointers during the summer. We can all attach to a player needs to work on this particular attribute. Then they work on that particular attribute during the summer, and then they constantly get made fun of on social media. So I ask you the question. Everyone said, I mean, even Magic Johnson was talking about Luka Doncic needs to be in shape. Luka Doncic ain't done nothing but get traded to the Los Angeles Lakers. He didn't even have the opportunity to even have an offseason yet before Magic Johnson is on national television with Stephen A. Smith yelling about how Luka Doncic needs to be in shape. Hey, come on, man. This is the Los Angeles Lakers. Made a slight calculated mistake by bringing up Shaquille O'Neal, whose career in Los Angeles ended because, wait for it, he wasn't in shape. So Luka needs to get in shape. Luka approaches this offseason by going to get in shape. Reporter who covers the Los Angeles Lakers writes about how what you asked for in Luka Doncic getting in shape is happening. And yet the internet still makes fun of him. NBA Twitter still caps on him for this. And it's like, yo, what is it that you want him to do? It's no different than Ben Simmons shooting threes during the offseason. You want Ben Simmons to shoot more. You want him to develop a jumper. He does it. It winds up getting shot on video. It makes its way to the internet, and then it becomes a punchline. But these guys are literally doing what their fan bases, or in some cases, their teammates, their legends, their executives, their whatever, their people associated with their franchise are telling them to do. And no one buys it. No one takes it seriously. Luka, people would say, yo, Luka did this last year. No, he didn't. No, he didn't. Luka wasn't in shape last offseason. In fact, didn't Luka's calf injury like start in October? Or maybe that was a hamstring injury that was in October. Oh, I'm sorry. It wasn't an injury. My mistake. That's when Nico Harrison told him, hey man, you need to go get in shape, and then gave him like 11 days off or something like that. That big fabricated story that dropped after Luka was traded. Oh man, what are we doing? Luka is doing what everyone has asked him to do. I'm not getting hype saying, oh, watch out for Luka Doncic. This about to go crazy. Watch out for Luka. He about to be this. Oh, the league is about to be unleashed. Watch out. Yeah, nah, man. I'm not doing that. I'm just looking at a dude who y'all told to go get in shape. He went and got in shape. Good for Luka Doncic. Hopefully it leads to nothing but no success for the Los Angeles Lakers. And I asked Eddie this a second ago, and I actually really agree with Eddie. When we look at some of the biggest stories right now, again, just within the last week, 6 days, we saw Kevin Durant being traded. That was virtually an all-season thing we expected to happen. We saw the Boston Celtics shed like $180 million in salary. Another thing that had long been speculated about what was going to happen. We saw Tyrese Halliburton tear his Achilles. We saw Shai Gilgeous-Alexander cap off one of the most phenomenal seasons in NBA history. And we saw the Oklahoma City Thunder complete one of the most incredible turnarounds we've seen for a professional sports franchise by winning the NBA championship. All of that has happened within the last 6 days. But what's going to be the biggest? And didn't even mention Cooper Flagg was drafted. We just had the NBA draft. We have the Ace Bailey situation. Dylan Harper winds up in San Antonio, takes a FaceTime, and Victor Wembanyama's on the other end, and he goes, "Hey, my name is Vic." It was like it was both humorous and charming at the same time. But I ask you this: what's the biggest story 1 week from right now? Because there is no championship to be won. There is no draft to be had. We're talking about free agency, and we're talking about the trade market. What's the biggest story 1 week from now? 1 week from today, I think, is the 4th of July. What are we talking about at the barbecue? What are we talking about when the fireworks are going off? What are basketball fans clamoring for? What are Kings fans clamoring for as a week from today? I think we'll be a week away from Summer League. All of the executives will be in Las Vegas. And the truth is, I don't know what it's going to be, but I don't expect it to be anything major. We have long talked like this. The Giannis thing is getting difficult. It's getting difficult to make heads or tails of what's going on with Giannis Antetokounmpo. And not what Giannis wants, but the way Giannis is being reported, because now it's like a battle of insiders and you don't know exactly what the truth is. These multiple insiders are, I'm sure they're all reporting what they're getting from people, but they're getting people talking to them in different camps. And so everybody's trying to get their story out. And one story was Giannis is closely monitoring, you know, the draft and free agency. And there's constant, it feels like, and this is where it's difficult. I don't want to pile on Giannis Antetokounmpo because I don't even know if any of this is true, but it feels like there's a Like he's kind of like the 1 foot in, 1 foot out. Like, ah, he's thinking about it. Oh, there's going to be this big meeting between the Bucks and Giannis's people. Oh, he's monitoring this and he's monitoring that. If that's true, this is all like a Giannis asking out. It's just inevitable. It's not even an if anymore. It's just a when. And in that case, the Bucks would be foolish to not inquire about trading him now. They're waiting for him to ask out. Now, I don't know what the Milwaukee Bucks think they can accomplish with Dame Lillard on the shelf for an entire season, which is why I think this Kings search for a point guard is so intriguing. The Celtics, they seemed to have landed their guy who will take Jason Tatum's place next year in Anthony Simons. The Bucks and Indiana are in different situations. Different situations than Boston. Indiana is, you know, once you remove this season, remove the fact that they lost tie on a night that they were competing for the NBA championship. You look at all of those teams are in the Eastern Conference. All of those players that we referenced, those teams are in the Eastern Conference. So doesn't a player like Dennis Schroeder become more attractive for those two teams for a single season? Doesn't a player like Russell Westbrook become more attractive for those two teams for a single season? I see a lot of Kings fans talking about Colin Sexton. Doesn't acquiring Colin Sexton, again, you're talking about a single season. Hell, maybe you keep them around for two. That way Ty isn't under too much pressure when he gets back. Maybe, you know, not you can obviously he'll have time. He'll have next offseason to really prepare. And that should, you know, knock off some of the rust. It's not like Kyrie is tough for me. Like the Dallas situation is tough for me because I don't, landing Cooper Flagg, Anthony Davis. It's why I propose, like, maybe you have to trade Anthony Davis this offseason. Because you're essentially, you're always hoping and praying that he stays healthy, but you've lost Kyrie, and I know he's not out for the entire year, but the idea that Kyrie just steps on the floor after tearing his ACL and is back to Kyrie, that's a ton of pressure on him. That might set unrealistic expectations for your franchise. The best thing you can hope for, I think, if you're Dallas, is that Cooper Flagg emerges in his rookie year as that dude. Then you've got Kyrie coming along the following season or maybe halfway through the season and guiding along whatever the end of this looks like for Dallas and, you know, leading them into something that could potentially be special. It's just hard for me to buy in. And this is where I keep getting hung up on the idea of trading Anthony Davis. He's still a solid defensive player, and Nico Harrison, for better or worse, has stuck to that line about defense. You're not going to acquire a player, and I'm not even talking about Anthony Davis's skill set. You're not going to acquire a player who can do a fraction of what Anthony Davis can do on the defensive end in a trade for him. So do you just cross your fingers and ride this out? And that's the other concern. If, in fact, this upcoming season for Dallas is about Cooper Flagg, then you're hoping Anthony, maybe you hope for the best between Cooper Flagg, Anthony Davis, and a late arriving Kyrie Irving. But if not, you're a year further into Anthony Davis. Where I know everyone's going to be anxious about Anthony Davis being healthy year after year, regardless of if it's this year, the year after the other year, year after that. Any year Anthony Davis is playing, the fan base that he's playing for is going to be anxious about his availability. And I keep looking at Dallas like, are they going to do something over the course of the next couple of days that gets everybody's attention? And they too, much like Indiana, much like Milwaukee, and much like the Sacramento Kings, are in the point guard game. And so I know, I kind of wonder, James said something, I think it was yesterday, 2 days ago, where he was like, when the Dennis Schroeder report, when Mark Stein first reported that the Kings were really interested in Dennis Schroeder, it was like, yeah, like Kings fans were like, ugh, so underwhelming. But then when he winds up re-signing with Detroit, Kings fans are going to be like, we couldn't even get Dennis Schroeder. And there's a very real possibility that you could run through a long list of point guards that wind up going elsewhere. I'll say this until it's announced on Monday. I believe Russell Westbrook opted out of his deal with Denver because he knew exactly where he was going. His agent knew exactly where he was going. Now, he opted out long enough ago where I don't believe that's Indiana. It might be Milwaukee. Or it could be someone I haven't mentioned and I'm not even thinking of. It absolutely could be. Yeah, why couldn't it be Dallas? Westbrook there with Kyrie out for a chunk of the season. Russ is there. Kyrie doesn't have to rush back into playing 30 minutes a night when he returns. You can ease him into it if, I don't think they will be, but if Dallas is in playoff position, you allow him to ramp up for the playoffs. Again, I don't think Dallas is going to be in playoff position unless Anthony Davis is very healthy and plays incredible. And Cooper Flagg needs no transition to the NBA. He's just great right out the gate. That's the way it works.
I guess Jason Kidd was saying today, he spoke with the media, and I guess he kept talking about Cooper Flagg playing point guard. So okay. I kind of wonder if that's the plan, if they think he's just going to be that good out the gate. I'm skeptical. I think that's where Russell Westbrook could fit really nice.
Yeah, don't love that idea.
I don't hate it. I don't hate it as a developmental thing. If you've got Cooper
is
Flagg,
is that how you want him to start his career though? Is playing in that position?
No, probably not. But that's where I think a Russell Westbrook fits great there.
Yeah.
Not only do you need Kyrie Irving, probably needs a full year,
right,
to come back
100%.
So you get Russell Westbrook in there, and it's the same philosophy as the Blazers bringing in Drew Holiday. He's for me. If you're looking for Cooper Flagg to develop as a point guard, okay, hey, here's a Hall of Famer.
Sure.
Who's good at a little bit of everything. I don't hate that idea at all.
Okay. All right. So we're on to something, and I think you can look around the league and see, or at least look around the league at the teams that have injured guards and realize this is going to be I don't know if he will, given what's happened the last few weeks. Like, I think Russ played at $3 million, I think, for his time in the league. I think that's a vet minimum. Russ has an opportunity to get a couple bucks this year. You know, some of these other point guards who you just think might be, you know, 1 year rentals here, 1 year rentals here. Like, these guys have an opportunity to get a couple of bucks. And the thing that I think really worked out for Russ, I think I was the one who said during that Oklahoma City Thunder series is this series goes as Russell Westbrook goes. And that wasn't about, you know, where Russ is at in his career. That is about where the Denver Nuggets were. They had no depth and they needed one other guy to be great. And when Russell Westbrook was great, they won games in the playoffs. Russ was really good throughout the season. That's the other thing like that can get frustrating is don't minimize, you know, Russell Westbrook's year last year to the last, you know, that last series against Oklahoma City. That Denver Nuggets team went on their biggest run when Russell Westbrook wound up being in the starting lineup and he seamlessly transitioned back to coming off of the bench. Russ was really, really good last year in his role. Russ was great in his role last year. The question will be whether it's with Sacramento, is he asked to play a different role? Is he asked to play the starting point guard? Whether it's with Indiana, whether it's with Dallas, as Kyle and I were just talking about right there, whether it's with Milwaukee, is he asked to be the starting guard? In the case of Indiana, Milwaukee, and Dallas, he absolutely would be asked to be the starting point guard at least for a year. What would he be asked for in Sacramento? But I maintain what I've been saying all along. It might have changed with the Tyrese Halliburton injury, but I think Dame already, I think Russ already knows what team he's going to, which is why I lend a little bit more validity to the Dennis Schroeder stuff. Dennis Schroeder might very well wind up a Sacramento King. But that's not going to be a massive story. It'll be a story here, but we've, I mean, Sham Sharania, the most prominent insider in the game, friends with our man Eddie Gonzalez, who was with us, you know, a few minutes ago. Eddie was like, I'm not sure. I don't really expect anything crazy. You know, maybe there'll be some trades out there, but I don't think anything crazy. It's been 4 months of, yo, this could be the craziest offseason ever. Well, KD has moved. I don't think Giannis is being traded this offseason. I don't think Trey is being traded. I don't think LaMelo is being traded. I didn't see the Desmond Bain thing happening, but the only thing that was really seismic about the Desmond Bain trade was the return. It wasn't, oh my God, Desmond Bain was traded. It was, oh my God, there were four first-round picks involved in this Desmond Bain trade. And I said it when it happened. If you think you're a Desmond Bain away, hey, salute. Get it done. Go make that move you think you have to make. They did it. Indiana did it. Siakam was their guy. They made that move. They paid that money. We wondered, would Trey be that guy for Sacramento? Make that move, pay that money. Very, very clear. Crystal clear. He is not. I'm not even sure that he was actually available. I mean, we heard rumblings that Atlanta would entertain moving him, that Atlanta and Sacramento were engaged in trade conversations, but how engaged were they and how far did those conversations go? I have no idea. And I don't think he's being traded. I don't think LaMelo Ball is being traded. The biggest name that might be traded, and I'm not even sold on this yet, given the state of this franchise at the moment, is Mikal Bridges. Is the front office sold on Mikal Bridges' ability to help that basketball team? New York just needs to run it back. Player-wise, obviously, they can't run it back fully anymore because they fired Tom Thibodeau and have yet to hire anyone in his place. But roster-wise, yo, that team is good enough. There's enough on that team to do it again. But if someone gets moved, is it Mikal? But all of this talk about the crazy offseason ahead and the stars and Derek White and Jaylen Brown and getting under aprons, and I don't think any of it is happening. I think Miami's just going to continue to make mid moves and be mid. You know who I think is the most interesting player to watch on Monday is Jonathan Kuminga. I think everything Golden State does next centers on Jonathan Kuminga, and I think it centers on the market for Jonathan Kuminga. I think someone, a general manager, team, whatever, will absolutely go all in on Jonathan Kuminga. But what does that look like? I have no idea. He might be the biggest story a week from now. The Golden State Warriors might be the biggest story a week from now because they, Kenny and I were talking about this a couple of days ago, the Golden State Warriors, no matter how good you think Jonathan Kuminga is, or if you just don't think he fits on the Golden State Warriors, whatever it may be, the Warriors are about one thing right now, and it's number five for Steph Curry. Get Steph. It isn't even about getting the Golden State Warriors a championship. It's about get Steph Curry one more ring. That five puts him in company with Kobe Bryant, Tim Duncan, and more importantly, I believe in the mind of the Golden State Warriors, it separates him from LeBron James. And I think you can acquire enough with the Jonathan Kuminga move where the Golden State Warriors could be frustratingly good next year. We'll come back. If you missed the Insider's conversation with Ali Farouk Maneshi as the head coach of Colorado State, he is Neat Clifford's coach. You will hear from him when D'Lo and Casey return here on Sacramento Sports Leader ESPN 1320. Home.
This is D'Lo and Casey on ESPN 1320, brought to you by Sky River Casino.
Sky River Casino is the place to play with 2,100 of the newest slot machines and over 80 table games. Sky is the limit at Sky River Casino. We have got a lot more to talk about. You know, I mentioned this, and I'm not sure because I want to play. The Insiders had the opportunity today to talk to Al Farouk Maneshi, the head coach of Colorado State, where, of course, Neat Clifford played. And I want to run that conversation for you in its entirety here in just a heartbeat. But I mentioned earlier that what we saw from Oklahoma City and Sacramento on Wednesday night is probably going to have to be the norm for Oklahoma City to a certain degree moving forward. Like, everyone is very aware of the treasure trove of picks that organization has, the treasure trove of assets that organization has. And, you know, it's this idea, you know, the draft and the number of draft picks doesn't seem to really be about the players you can acquire through the draft anymore. It seems to be who's willing to trade a player to you to get a bunch of those draft picks. And obviously the Thunder made a deal with Sacramento. It was far from seismic, but they did trade out of this particular draft. Now they're in on another one. Now those picks could wind up being a first, could wind up being multiple seconds. Most likely it's a first round pick, but they got out of this draft. And that's what I think we're going to have to see from Oklahoma City more moving forward, is find teams. They can't draft all of these players. It's Casey's old thing. I'd never do a deal with Oklahoma City. Well, the Kings had a player that they wanted in Neat Clifford. Oklahoma City was right there. They knew they could make a deal with them. They did just that. But when you look at the idea of acquiring players, even one, like what would a player for the Oklahoma City Thunder have done this year? Like this upcoming season, I should say. This is a team that just won the NBA championship. You're going to try to incorporate an 18-year-old, a 19-year-old into a championship-winning team. You got multiple first-round picks next season. So you didn't make anyone this year. All right, perfect. You got your squad out there. Now you've got guys like Chet, J-Dub, SGA. Now they stop being the, you know, cute young team, and now they start becoming the veteran team. And then you try to incorporate these young players now who are in a championship situation because of the way Sam Presti has run this organization. The second they step on the floor, does any of this sound familiar? This is exactly what went on with the Golden State Warriors. Now, we can argue about whether the Golden State Warriors handled it properly, and that's certainly very much a big part of this discussion. We got the famous two timeline line. And I was absolutely of the belief that the Golden State Warriors had two timelines, and I was absolutely of the belief that the Golden State Warriors were going to be near the top of the Western Conference for years to come. But something happened along the way. That team won an NBA championship. And I think you can make the argument, and this is not shade whatsoever, they probably weren't supposed to win that one. That was like, but they did it. Like, they went out and won of their four easily the most unlikely NBA championship that they have. Probably one of the most unlikely championship if you just take the team within that season in recent memory. And then it started to become, yo, we can keep doing this. And that two timeline thing got put on hold. Why? Because those young players hadn't developed yet. And I don't know how you develop young players on a team that is expected to win a championship the second they step on the floor. Like, Cooper Flagg is not expected to win a championship next year. There is a certain... Now, I know everyone wants to win a championship, but if you're a rookie stepping on the floor with Chet Holmgren, SGA, the team that is getting their rings, you're watching that basketball team get their rings, their first night in the... Your first night in regular season NBA action. Yo, that's pressure. When you start hearing things like, hey, could SGA solidify himself as one of the greats? Like, this is could this be a true dynasty in the NBA? Yo, there is pressure for these young guys. Now, I don't know if a two-timeline thing doesn't work. I don't know if the two-timeline thing was just messed up by the Golden State Warriors. I just don't know how you develop young players while trying to win an NBA championship at the same time. And that's where using your assets to acquire other players of the same timeline matters. That's why finding guys who fit what SGA, J-Dub, Chet, all they're doing. I think we're about a half a season away from speculating on Chet Holmgren's future with the Oklahoma City Thunder. And this is what Draymond was talking about. We're not there yet. But each passing year, we're starting to approach it. But this is what Draymond was talking about. And this is where, and we, you know, give the devil their due, this is where he was right. The new collective bargaining agreement makes it extremely difficult for teams like Oklahoma City Thunder that hit on the draft. The Golden State Warriors built their team primarily from within. Klay, I don't think, is not in Golden State anymore because he's not good anymore, because he's not the Klay Thompson of old. We know how much Joe Lacob loves nostalgia. It's because they recognized, we're probably not going to win a title with this group anymore. Now we've got not just taxes, because Joe Lacob was at... I'll credit Joe Lacob for this for eternity. He said, if we have a championship, I'll pay the taxes. I will pay for us if it means we're winning a championship. If we're not, we've got to make some changes. Then these aprons get put into play. That changed the game. First apron, second apron, a complete game changer, because it's not just tax penalties that go along with this. It's the ability to add and improve. I should say, it's the inability to add players and improve that affects you the most. I think it was Boston's owner that was talking about that during the sale process of the Boston Celtics. It's not the money. Everyone's talking about get under the apron, the money. No, you've got to get under the apron or you can't make a move as a basketball team. And so Oklahoma City's trade with Sacramento on Wednesday, I think, was a sign of what's to come for Oklahoma City. They've got all of these draft picks, and whether they trade them on draft night or they trade them for a star that wants to come in and join the franchise, which that will be one of the really interesting things to watch. Because Oklahoma City is universally, and I'm not talking about the basketball team, I'm talking about the city, is almost universally considered the boringest city in the NBA. Like, teams have movie nights on the road in Oklahoma City. That's not shade. That's a shoot. I've heard it. I've gotten reports from them. Like, that is a real thing, and it seems to always happen in Oklahoma City. Some teams do it in Sacramento. True story. But they're really good. They play a certain level of basketball, and they have the assets to acquire anyone in the league they want, assuming that team out there would do business with them. That includes Giannis Antetokounmpo. So what the Oklahoma City Thunder did with the Sacramento Kings on Wednesday night, I think, is the first step in something we see a lot over the next 3 to 4 years in some way, shape, or form, with Oklahoma City trading those picks. Of course, that pick was used to draft Nick Clifford. Colorado State, 6'6 wing, coached by Al Farouk Manesh, who talked with the insiders earlier today. And here's that conversation that you heard on ESPN 1320. Nope, try it again.
All right, let's get right to it here on The Insider, sponsored by Jiffy Lube. He's James Hamm. I'm Kyle Madsen. And joining us now, Coach Ali Farouk Manesh. He has been with Colorado State for the last, I believe, 7 years. Is 7 years now, Coach, you've been in, that you've been in Fort Collins?
Yeah, 7 years, going on eight now. So it's, yeah, long time.
Well, congratulations on the recent promotion to the head coaching job there. That's outstanding for you. I'm really happy for you. But I want to get to Neat Clifford. We only got a few minutes with you here, but I want to get to Neat Clifford, who you coached over his 2 years at Colorado State with the Rams. What type of player are the Kings getting with Neat Clifford?
And obviously, I think the first thing that comes to mind when you talk about Neek is his versatility. He truly is a two-way player, and I think he showed that both years with us, to be honest. And then the scoring and the shooting and the playmaking really picked up in his second year. But, I mean, he's always been an elite rebounder. And I think from a guard position, like he's on the Josh Hart type level of rebounding. From a comparison standpoint, to be honest, it's kind of ironic, but I've always kind of, because I grew up watching the Kings with them in the Mike Bibby era and whatnot, and Doug Christie comes to mind in some ways. And I think, so it's kind of ironic, but I love the way he competes on the defensive end of the floor. But I think in the last year, what he added to his game is the shot making off the dribble, off the move, off the catch and shoot, and then his secondary playmaking skills. There's not a lot of guys that you can say are true wings defensively that also can make plays for others on the other end of the floor too.
You know, Coach, when you're looking at his development, again, it's not like he was being squandered in Colorado, but when he came to you guys, he just took this massive leap. What has he done off the court that makes you feel like he's going to continue this this sort of, I don't know, aggressive ascension that he has since joining Colorado State?
Yeah, I don't want to say he changed the way he worked when he got to us, but I think he morphed his thinking and his mentality of the way he worked. We became way more intentional with what he was doing in his development. Cause everyone gets in the gym and like, he was always going to get better cause he loved being in the gym, but the intentionality that he had with his work in terms of his shooting right away, when he first got here, we were working on his feet and his balance and then his one motion. And then the next thing we wanted to work on was him playing off 2 feet better. And so once he progressed in that area, then the next year when he came back, it was his shooting off the dribble. And then obviously his ball handling too, because we thought he'd become more of a playmaker in that year too for us. And each one of those things was very specific. And I think you could see that progression happen through those 2 years here. And it all led to this. And it doesn't always work out that way when you have someone that's willing to work, buy into the work. And then the humility that he has, because a lot of guys, you tell them what they need to work on and they don't want to hear it. And he was very accepting of what we thought we needed to work on right away. And it was fun to see that progression happen for him that fast. And it's cool to now say that we got four guys that are going to be on NBA rosters this coming season.
Talking with Colorado State men's basketball coach Ali Farouk Manesh. Now, Neek could have come out last year in the draft, but he chose to go back to school there in Fort Collins. What was it? What was A, the reason you think he went back, and B, what were some of the things you think he improved with that extra year in college?
Yeah, honestly, you just don't want to go back to school. That was the biggest thing.
Sure.
I mean, you've been in school up to that 4 years. He's graduated already. Like, it was kind of, that was one of the biggest things to him. And then it got to the point, it was like, you know, everyone says bet on yourself, and that I took that more as bet on yourself to come back to college to improve your stock. Mm-hmm. And he had basically 6 months, 7 months with us at that point from the time he got here in June to the end of that season. So we thought if we had another 9 months to work on his game, that he would change completely, because he made that much progress in essentially 7 months. What would he look like with another 9 months with us? And so specifically right away, it was the shooting off the bounce and the ball handling, because we thought he had Isaiah Stevens the year before that set him up for a lot of plays. And this year we thought he was going to have to make plays for himself and for others more. And that showed up, I mean, in a completely different atmosphere than I think anybody thought, which I thought was ironic. He came out trying to come out the year before, and he only was looked at as a 3-and-D wing. Then this year, now we had teams calling us and being like, well, is he like a secondary point guard type player? And it's like no one even talked to me about that a year ago. So it's a huge credit to him just buying into that work and also having the humility to understand, like, yeah, I'm not good enough in these areas yet. I need to improve. And he did. Like, he made double the amount of threes he made the year before. And the year before that, he made double the amount of threes that he made previously in his entire career at Colorado. So the level of growth and development over the 20 months was something that that's what we pride ourselves on. But that doesn't happen with a lot of kids either.
You know, one of the stats that jump out on his box score for me is his free throw attempts jump from 2.3 to 5 from his fourth to fifth season. And, you know, again, before that, he'd capped out at like 1.5 free throw attempts. That shows me that, number one, he's got the ball in his hands more, but also, number two, he's being more physical going to the basket. Is that something that you guys were able to work with him, sort of the development of the off the dribble game and getting to the basket, drawing contact?
Absolutely. It's funny you say that, because that was one of the key things that we thought we needed to develop. If you want to be a true scorer, that doesn't mean just making shots. Like, the best scorers in the world get to the free throw line. I mean, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, right? Foul merchant. Mm-hmm. So you look at all those guys, like, the best scorers get to the foul line. When they're not making shots, they're still scoring 4 to 5 points a game just at the foul line. And he did a tremendous job of not only getting the line, but also converting once he got to the line. So no, you're 100. It's funny you point that out, because we made a sheet prior to the season, and that was one of the four things that we needed to work on and grow in. And that's what he did. I mean, he went from 12 points a game. If you just add the free throws right there, he's already at 15 to 16. And then obviously you add some more scoring and playmaking at the rim, and he got to 19 to 20 points a game.
Ollie Farouk Maneshi is the head coach of Colorado State. He helped coach Nick Clifford during his 2 years there. What type of guy is he? Is he quiet? Is he a vocal leader? Tell me about him as a person.
That is the most elite teammate you're ever going to have. And I think there's the one thing that I can point to, the story that always comes to mind to me is, so he's at Colorado before. Obviously, Colorado State don't like each other. So that year, his first year with us, we beat Colorado at home. So they really don't like us now. But then some of his best friend, Tristan Da Silva, who's now with the Orlando Magic, they're having senior night in Colorado, and we're off. I think we had like a 2-day break or something. Well, he decides to drive up from Fort Collins to Boulder, which is about a 35-40 minute drive, on Tristan's senior night. It was up for Tristan Da Silva's senior night. I don't know too many guys that would do that in general, but much less you're going into enemy territory at the same time. And I think that just speaks volumes to the type of teammate he is as well. You're not only getting an elite basketball player, but the type of teammate that you want, not only with the other guys in your locker room, but also in the community.
That's outstanding. Coach, thank you so much for your time, man. Know you're super busy this time of year, so really appreciate you.
Great stuff from the insiders right there from earlier today on ESPN 1320, talking to Ollie Farouk Maneshi, the head coach of Colorado State basketball, of course. Neat Clifford's head coach.
I really appreciate you cutting that off before I stumbled my way through the outro. That was super nice of you.
I got you, buddy. No. Yeah, I got you.
It's great.
Sometimes, you know, the two most difficult things in the game, in this game, can often be saying hello and saying goodbye.
1,000%, dude.
This happens to Kenny and I on KSFM all of the time, where we'll be conveying a message about the Ty Dolla Sign concert, right? And then we can't find the exit. And it's just like,
all right,
just go to commercial, stupid. And you just can't find your way to get out. And I always say starting the conversation and ending the conversation can often be the two most difficult things. And so that's perfectly fine. Perfectly fine. That was a great conversation. Anything stand out to you in the conversation you guys had?
Yeah, I think the part about him being an elite teammate,
yeah,
that bodes well for me.
Sure.
Because regardless of how his game translates, whether Neek Clifford is an all-star or a 15 minutes a night role player, he's going to do whatever his role winds up being, I think he's going to do it well in service of the team.
Yeah.
If that's where his mindset really is, like, I'm going to do everything I can for my teammates, for my brothers. They need me to play this role or that role. I'll do that to the best of my ability. That matters a lot to me.
Yeah, and I think that's a great characteristic to have when we don't know exactly what his role is going to be next year. Like we can guess, we can speculate. Man, we don't know what this team is going to look like Tuesday afternoon, much less what it's going to look like when these guys take the floor for camp here in a few months.
Yeah, the opposite version of this is a guy like Jonathan Kuminga, who has all the talent in the world, but the Warriors needed him to play a certain role.
Yeah.
Like, hey, do these things. And he went, no, I'm better than that. I would like to do different things. I would like to impact the game in this way.
Yeah.
And I think that ability to go, I'm going to play this role. This is going to be my role moving forward. Or the team needs me to do this on this night. They need me to do something else another night. Oh, I'm going to start this night and play 35 minutes. I think the ability to recognize that is a skill that not every player has.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And this is a team that's in flux right now. Like, it's a team where, I mean, Neek doesn't know. Domas doesn't know. Malik doesn't know. We don't know exactly where this team is going, what direction they're going, what they're doing. And maybe we'll get some answers on Monday. I don't expect everything to be figured out on Monday. I expect a slow trickle of signings. I'm not sure if there's, you know, trades for this team to be made. I don't expect Trey Lyles to be back. I wonder if both of these draft picks that the Sacramento Kings made, you know, of course they signed some, you know, some guys, some undrafted free agents, and, you know, there have been exhibit 10s throughout the day, two ways throughout the day. Like, the Kings took part in that as well. I don't know how much of that will have an impact on Sacramento this year, but of course, one storyline we are following is the Keon Ellis one, who was a G League player. He was an undrafted free agent. He was a guy, you know, on those exhibit 10s and G League contracts and all of that different stuff. So it'll be a fascinating few weeks to see what direction that the Sacramento Kings go. And I go back and look at some of these comments in the chatty house. Young Sav asked, did I miss hearing something, D-Lo? There have been reports of Malik being gone. And I don't know that there are reports that Malik is gone. I think there's conversations about who doesn't fit on this basketball team. And so many people for so many weeks, months, have thought, well, the answer is DeMar DeRozan. DeMar DeRozan doesn't fit. And I don't know that that's, I'm not going to argue with anyone. He's a ball stopper. He doesn't shoot threes, or he doesn't shoot enough threes, or he doesn't. In that regard, maybe you're right. I mean, Marshall Harris joined us multiple times this past season. And Marshall Harris, Chicago, he's watched DeMar DeRozan many times. He walked in and said, how y'all like the ball stopper? It's not new to Sacramento. It's kind of what has been labeled to DeMar DeRozan. And the one thing that bothers me, and there were a couple of these, let's make sure we get to them. I want to start with my man, Mr. 49er. He said we need more ball movement so Murray can get more touches and the rest of the team. DeMar DeRozan slows down too much. Of course, these comments are courtesy of the Chatty House over on YouTube.com/ESPN1320, Twitch.tv/ESPN1320, and on Twitter as well. Just make sure you're following us at ESPN1320. The idea that DeMar DeRozan or any other player in a Sacramento Kings uniform is hindering the development of Keegan Murray is laughable to me. I don't know why Keegan isn't shooting the percentage of threes, or is hitting the percentage of threes that he did in his rookie year. I think Kenny and I looked this up a couple of weeks ago, and I'm more than happy to do it again. It wouldn't be the first time I looked up the same stat a billion times, but I believe the year over year number was less than two shots per game. It's less than two, but we'll call it two shots. Keegan Murray in 2023-2024 averaged 12.7 field goal attempts. 2024-2025, he averaged 10.8. So in this world we've created for ourselves, DeMar DeRozan kept DeMar DeRozan single-handedly kept Keegan Murray from shooting the ball on average two more times per game. I do find it fascinating how everyone is clamoring for Keegan Murray to shoot the ball more and willing to blame DeMar DeRozan as the reason that Keegan Murray isn't shooting the ball more. When I infamously asked Domantas Sabonis to shoot the ball one or two more times per game, I was killed for it. I was told I hated Domantas Sabonis. Domas has, man, you talk about the picture of consistency. 12.5, 12.1, 13.5, 11.9, 13, 12.8. Bro is what he is. Those are Domantas Sabonis' shot attempts per game. He averaged 19 points per game at 12.8 shots. You go back a little more, it's even more impressive. He averaged 11.9 shots, 19.1 points per game. Yeah, Domas is efficient. But again, 19 points on 12 shots. Keegan Murray last year was 12 points on 10 shots. The year before, he was 15 points on 12 shots. Okay. The person who has stopped Keegan Murray, I want to be nice for a second, because I don't believe that there's anyone who is hindering Keegan Murray from being what he was his second year, his first year, from being great, from being whatever. Like, I don't believe there's any Sacramento King that is doing that. But I do wonder if his role on the defensive end has changed that a little bit. How many times did we see shots come up short last year? Really, you could look at over the last, you know, couple of years. I feel like we saw it pretty regularly. Maybe it's what Mike Brown was asking him to do. Maybe part of last year wasn't just DeMar DeRozan, but it was the switch from Mike Brown to Doug Christie. Maybe not just DeMar DeRozan and the switch from Mike Brown to Doug Christie. Maybe it was the loss of De'Aaron Fox, which is why I keep going back to. It's why I keep going back to the same thought that maybe there were extenuating circumstances last season that led this team to underachieve. Again, there is a level of maybe we overvalued this team a little bit, or maybe not even a little bit, maybe a lot, after the DeMar DeRozan trade. Maybe the idea of 50 wins was a little bit too ambitious. And of course, this is a different basketball team to start the year than it was last year. Last year, De'Aaron Fox started on this basketball team. So we know that that's not happening. Now, the flip side to that is Zach LaVine is here for the full year, too. And I know people don't like to acknowledge the human side of professional athletes all the time. Zach LaVine and his wife had a baby a couple of days before he was traded here. And they all moved from Chicago to Sacramento. Like, I think he was living at the Sawyer or whatever hotel they stay at for, I assume, the entire season. Like, there was a human aspect to what Zach LaVine was dealing with last year. Sure, this all started with Keegan Murray. Yo, Uncle Keegs. That was the nickname. The kids, De'Aaron, that was his dog. Like, they were together. There's a human aspect of all of this that I think factored into last year. Did it affect him? I have no idea. But whether it did or it didn't, it can't anymore. Because this season can't be tied to anything that happened last year. Mike's not here. De'Aaron's not here. Let's move forward with this group and figure out what it looks like. I wrote this down in my notes, and I've been hesitant to say it all day. But I do think you know, Matt George was talking about yesterday, and he even mentioned it today. You know, there is a possibility of, you know, Scott Perry might look at this as a gap year, which is such a stupid ass term. I hate it, but I know what Matt means. Just like I knew what it meant when Sam Amick said, you know, said it, you know, 2 years ago or whatever it was, 3 years ago. But the only thing that might scare off Sacramento Kings fans more than the term gap year is the phrase run it back. Because when I look and wonder, is trading DeMar DeRozan the right thing? I don't know that it is. I don't know that you can really trade Zach LaVine. Maybe you can. I don't know. I don't think you're trading Domantas Sabonis. As Matt George told us, I don't think there's a market for Malik Monk. You got Neek. Maybe you got Maxine, the big French kid who they took yesterday. Maybe he's a part of the main roster at the jump, despite the fact he was the second round pick. Don't expect Trey to be back. We know a point guard is coming in, but the point guards that have been referenced with Dennis Schroeder being the loudest is they're guys who you'd be like, oh, that'd be a cool acquisition as a backup point guard. Now, I don't know if the plan is if Dennis Schroeder winds up here for him to be the starting point guard. I don't know if Russell Westbrook winding up here is a plan to be the starting point guard. But we know that a point guard needs to come into play, and we're wondering if fans are going to be underwhelmed by that selection. So the big change that fans might have been hoping for, it might not be coming. My man Brian in the chat is saying, D'Lo, are you talking yourself into running it back? No. Don't misunderstand what I'm saying. I'm not talking myself into running it back. I'm telling you, there's a very real possibility this team might have to run it back.
Yeah.
It's not that Scott Perry is sitting on his hands. It's not that he's not getting something done. It's that, and I'm of this belief, you don't have to trade Malik Monk just to trade him, just to say you did something. Mm. You don't have to trade DeMar DeRozan if you don't like the deal, if you don't think it makes your team better. There might not be a deal for the Sacramento Kings to make that will dramatically improve this team or even moderately improve this team.
Yeah, I think my only real concern would be if Scott Perry looks at the Domantas Sabonis, Zach LaVine, DeMar DeRozan trio and goes, yeah, this is it. That would concern me a little because I don't what think that trio is it.
What if I understood, but what if he said, man, this is it for now?
Yeah, no, and I think that's what's happening. So I think that, like Malik Monk, you said, like, you don't think there's a market out there for him. I think the Kings are in a weird spot where they have players whose value is at its highest for Sacramento, but yeah, those players also don't work that well together.
Sure.
Is that, like, Domas in a vacuum is one of the best centers in the league.
Yeah.
But I think Matt hit the nail on the head. He's a really tough player to build around.
Yeah.
He's got this huge contract. You got to give up assets for him. And if you're the Kings, you're not just going to give away Domantas Sabonis.
Right.
You're not just going to give away DeMar DeRozan. So I am of the belief, and this is not, I am not a Kings apologist. I am not a Scott Perry apologist. I think the down the middle view of this is that Scott Perry is in a nigh impossible spot. He has been dealt a terrible hand because of the way this roster and their assets were managed over the last 12 to 18 months. It's just an if there's no deal out there, there's no deal out there.
Right. And this is where the thing goes back to De'Aaron. This is all,
yeah,
the De'Aaron thing has to be said in complete hindsight, because when the deal was done, I thought wherever the Kings were going with De'Aaron, I think they were going to the same place with Zach LaVine. I don't think it was any different. The problem is now.
Bro.
The problem is what we're living right now is, you know, in hindsight, you think in the moment, we absolutely thought this. this team could potentially do something, but like if De'Aaron doesn't want to be here, the effect that has on the locker room, the 1 foot out, you know, sure. for your point guard and your team leader, this is a bad, bad look. We have to end this immediately. I don't believe for nothing De'Aaron had a lick worth of leverage. He can talk like he does and he can act like he does, but there was it. All right. there was at least a team out there that would have been like, oh no, we'll try it. Like if he leaves, he leaves. Mm-hmm. But this whole people can talk about winning all they want to.
Mm-hmm.
We've said this repeatedly. If De'Aaron had been an all NBA player, he's going nowhere.
Right.
He's here. He could talk about Mike Brown and all of this. He knew in December when Mike Brown was fired and in the middle of January when all of this started, he knew he was not an all NBA player and that super duper max was out of the question.
Yep.
He knew that. So that's gone. So you can get to San Antonio and not really lose any money. Great. Because of that. Perfect. You trade him anywhere you want to. This whole idea that he's not going to sign here, he's not going to sign here. Rich Paul can puff his chest out because no one's called his bluff before.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very simple. Look, we want you here. We want you here long term. If you leave, salute. You leave. You're taking no money with you because we're not doing any sort of sign and trade. You're just effing leaving.
Mm-hmm.
But no one pulls those punk cards anymore. So this whole idea that Fox had all of the leverage, he was going to end up in San Antonio. KC says it all the time. He would have signed in San Antonio anyways. Fine. Sign in San Antonio for $50 million less.
But
it wasn't it. You would be like everyone. Oh, Jalen Brunson took a pay cut. The reason Jalen Brunson's pay cut was such a big story is because no one does it.
Mm-hmm.
And Kawhi is one of the very few guys who was like, no, I'm leaving.
Right.
I'm just leaving. I won the title. This is great. I'm just leaving. It does not happen. Even Paul George. Paul George stayed in Oklahoma City. In fact, salute Paul George. Build him a statue. He stayed in Oklahoma City, signed that contract, decided he wanted to go to L.A. because Kawhi was going there, mm-hmm. and now Oklahoma City is NBA champions. But the point was they took a gamble, and he stayed. When he decided he wanted to leave, OKC had all of the leverage.
Right. And I know this is a butterfly effect kind of thing, because if De'Aaron doesn't go to the Spurs, their record's different, they don't jump up to two. But let's pretend everything's the same. Let's pretend the Kings held on to De'Aaron until the summer. Do you think the Spurs still try and acquire
Absolutely
De'Aaron Fox
not.
With the number two pick?
Absolutely not. No chance.
Okay, so now
none.
You have so much more, talking about leverage.
Mm-hmm.
If you're the Kings, now you go, hey, the Spurs don't want you, dog.
Yep.
So here we go. Open bidding.
Yep.
And what you're getting back for De'Aaron Fox probably looks a little bit something like what you're getting back from the Desmond Bane trade.
There was absolutely, I don't know if it's that.
I don't know if it's, but.
So that was my other thing.
I just meant you're getting more than
you
got.
I hear you. One, the biggest loser of the lottery was the Sacramento Kings because of that.
Yes.
Because of San Antonio moving up to number two and everybody presuming that they knew who number two was, which it was. Mm-hmm. It was Dylan Harper. The other thing ties into what we've talked about a couple of times with Malik and a couple of other players. I do not know what De'Aaron's value was around the league. I have no idea. Like, I don't know. Orlando looked at Desmond Bane and said, we need a tough defender who can score.
Mm-hmm.
We need what we essentially need is a really, really good two-way player.
Specifically a guy who can shoot.
Right. De'Aaron is also a really good two-way player when he's engaged on the defensive end. It's not all of the time. It's a lot. But he is good on the defensive end. But I don't know who goes. Orlando thinks they're a Desmond Bane away from competing in the East.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know who goes. We're a De'Aaron Fox away from competing in insert conference here. I don't know who feels that way.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea that there would have been this robust market for De'Aaron Fox come this offseason, I don't know that that's true. But your point that you just made a second ago is the most valid one. He would have had they would have gotten a better trade package now than they did then.
Yep.
We are done for the day. You are done for the day. You've had a very long day. I appreciate you.
Yeah, I got some stuff to cut, but okay. Almost done. More close to done than you.
Well, you'd be surprised how inaccurate that statement is.
Oh, no.
Big shout out to our man, Kyle Mattson, for working the insiders. Andy Lou and Casey here today. We will be back Monday. You don't want to miss Monday's show. NBA free agency starts. We'll be on top of it all. We hope you'll tap in beginning at 10 a.m. on Sacramento Sports Leader ESPN 1320.
You're listening to D'Lo and KC. D'Lo and KC on ESPN 1320. ESPN 1320 traffic.
There was an earlier crash on Highway.